Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams, here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, it's the end of the week. It is Friday. We like to call it Fri-yay around here, and we got a sound effect for that, so hit it, man. Fri-yay! Yes, it is. You have made it to the end of another week, and oh, by the way, you've made it to the last Friday before we go to the polls. So, yeah, good stuff. We got a great show lined up for you, but that is indeed JP pushing buttons on the board. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Doing good. It's crazy to think that this is the last Friday before election day.
It's crazy to think it took this long to get here.
But yeah.
I'm just glad it is.
Yeah, I know. It's taken a long time.
It's not like it hadn't given me enough fodder for a conservative news talk show,
that's for sure.
At some point, I almost feel like you get tired of shooting bullets, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I also hope that my stuffiness doesn't come across on the mic today. Not physically, audibly, come across on the mic, you know?
Like you're doing pretty good, all things considered, like you're doing pretty good. Speaking of pretty good, we got a pretty good show laid on for you. So coming up at 3 o'clock today, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall calling in to talk to us about last days for the election. Just give us his thoughts as the chairman. My understanding is he actually is headed down to Mar-a-Lago here in a couple of days, so that should be good. But nonetheless, 3 o'clock, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. And then, you know, the thing we've been doing lately, 4 o'clock on Friday, JP on sports. So we'll get some JP on sports time at 4, give you all the latest in the world of sports. I mean, it's been a World Series week. We got NCAA football to talk about and goodness knows what else. So JP on sports, 4 o'clock today. And then I got a triple dipper filled with stuff, so hit it, man.
The triple dipper, three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the triple dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. So here's what I'm doing. I put this show together specifically tailored to what I believe are the top three things that voters care about. First dipper is the economy, second dipper is immigration, third dipper is the cultural, you know, just clashing with the left and the fact that they're lying constantly. I think those things, which is a trust issue, I think those three things are what people are looking at the most. Polls even tend to agree that's the top three issues. Number one, the dipper is an economic wrecking ball. I'm going to give you a solid example of what the left is doing to the economy. We just had a jobs report came out that had to be whittled down. There were only 12,000 jobs created, 12,000 in a nation of 333 million people in the last reporting period. That is awful. And it's a clear indication that the Democrats are indeed an economic wrecking ball. We'll talk about that as number one on the triple dipper. Number two, immigration nation. Listen, I got stories that relate to local, state, and national. The immigration issue is still vying with the economy to be the one or the two, depending on which week they poll it. But there is new evidence of illegals rushing to our border trying to get in. There is new evidence of illegals committing crimes on American citizens here that shouldn't even be here to commit those crimes. All said and done, this is a huge deal, and we're going to talk about it, the immigration nation, number two on the triple dipper. And then number three, I call this section Lying Liars. Lying Liars. It's amazing to me how much of the rhetoric in the final days of the campaign is not even centered on policy. It's on people lying about other people. And I think we're all sick of it. People want to trust their government. And right now, the level of rhetoric, the level of misrepresentation, the level of just clashing on matters of truth versus untruth, it's unbelievable. Lying Liars, that's number three on the triple dipper. It's going to be a good show. All right, well, let me jump into the Right Side Way opening monologue. And I called this one Pushback because we got to. And look, next week we go to the polls. And if you're like me, you likely feel that this election is bigger than just any other election. I mean, it's not just, hey, it's time to vote. I mean, it feels bigger than that. It has a sense of being huge. It has the sense of being a game changer or a game loser. I'm told that Coach Bear Bryant had a saying. He said that in every game, there's one play that can swing the momentum in the other direction, but you have to grab that play and move the momentum forward. Well, this election is a swing play for America. because the existential threat to all that we love as freedom-loving Americans, all that we hold dear, is real. It's the fight going on within our culture. So like many conservatives across the nation, I feel as though I've gone through like Alice's looking glass lately, right? Conservatives are told now that what we've always believed is right is now wrong, and that basic discourse is not allowed. Dissenting opinions are somehow considered fringe. The president of the United States just recently branded anyone who disagrees with him as garbage. The left says that just like little old me and anyone else who dares to think or vote like me is a threat to democracy itself. I fought for democracy. But government leaders at all levels have browbeaten citizens over the past 4 years like we've never seen. They have pushed agendas, they have ruined lives, they have crushed businesses by declaring winners and losers of society during the pandemic, in the auto industry, all of it. Declaring some businesses non-essential, shuttering society, keeping loved ones from being able to visit their dying relatives in hospitals, and then using federal relief dollars to largely fund more government. It's been a sick, kind of a self-licking ice cream cone. Big tech? Well, big tech was protected by sanctuary laws written to protect them. It's in full survival mode now, knowing that they got to cancel the opposition in order to maintain their status quo. I don't know what would have happened to the public discourse if Elon Musk had not spent billions to buy Twitter. And to add to the Mad Hatter's Tea Party, there's actual government action being taken to legitimize the misguided notion that a boy can be a girl, and that defining a woman scientifically is somehow impossible, and that men should be allowed to play in women's sports. Look, liberals across the nation have generated legitimate concern that given the opportunity, they will do all they can to water down our Supreme Court, degrade the efficiency and the accuracy of voting, label everything as infrastructure so they can use it to spend our grandchildren's money. 4 years ago, those concerns would have seemed far-fetched. But then 4 years ago, Georgia was a red state. Elections were sacred. Borders were secure. Riots were not allowed. Think about how much has been done to diminish our country in just 4 years. It's not a question, by the way, of accepting a differing viewpoint. That's not it. Politics is always cyclical. I get that. What goes around comes around, they say. I've often debated the issues, and at times I did not feel as though I was winning the debate every time. But I learned to keep working, continue with life, and just, you know, fuss at political differences. This is not that. This feels different. Conservatives, what we're experiencing today feels like a crushing attempt to literally change our way of life forever. But there are times, though, when the left pushes too far. There are times when good people who would normally be content to be quiet, to live quietly, to work quietly, when good people like that can bow up and get loud when all that they love and hold dear is being threatened. Have you ever seen or experienced one of those moments when someone is just pushed a little too far? Like the ones doing the pushing just could not grasp the fact that there might be a limit to the amount of pushing that they can get away with. And then suddenly the person getting pushed has just had enough, and they become the worst nightmare of the pushers. Well, you can just push someone so far before suddenly the pushy becomes the pusher. Case in point, here's a story from my home life. I've told this story before. It's been a couple of years, I believe. Anyone who knows my sweet wife, Charlene, will know what an amazing, gentle spirit she has. She has the gifts of mercy and of helping others. She's the one that's often called upon to help other people make things special for parties or events or weddings or the like. She can even take the most normal days and make them special. There's always fresh flowers in our house. There's always special things for the kids and the grandkids. There's a very good reason that her grandmom name is Sweetie. No kidding. The grandkids call her Sweetie, and it's a perfect fit. And by the way, don't be fooled by the sweet appearance. You push too far, especially when it comes to her family, and you might wake up a sleeping dragon. So in our family, like all of you, I'm sure, we have stories and inside jokes. There's plenty of stories about me or the kids, but one of my favorite stories of all time is one that I just call Sweetie and the Sergeant Major. So here's the deal. I left home for Army Ranger School in the winter of 91. I was a platoon leader in a long-range surveillance company. I got to Ranger School, and for various reasons, after I got there and I'm already out in the field, my orders got jacked up. So I was in the mountain phase of North Georgia when I learned that my pay had stopped. My orders were messed up. We had not been paid, and that's a big deal when you consider that my wife is living at home by herself with a 2-year-old, has no way to push the bills or pay the bills. Okay, that's she got pushed to number one. And our unit was absolutely no help whatsoever, which is another story by itself. They actually told her she could call state headquarters. Well, that's push number two. And when she did call state headquarters by herself, she got some guy named Sergeant Major O'Kelly, a man with no fondness for soldiers who got to go to special schools like Ranger and Airborne. He proceeded to tell her he felt no need to address the issue of my pay getting stopped. He wondered aloud why I'd even been allowed to go to such an expensive military school. Well, that was the last push. And I'm going to tell you right now, hell hath not the fury of a sweetie that's been scorned. So she called back after Sergeant Major O'Kelly had abruptly ended that phone call and demanded to talk to his boss, Brigadier General McLaughlin. Wow. Okay, I was a lieutenant, and my wife just got mad and called the general. But the general was an old paratrooper. He loved our unit. He got on the phone with her right away. He listened and he said, Ms. Williams, we're going to get this fixed right away. You just sit right there, sit tight. I'm going to get on it. He wished her well, said he looked forward to me graduating Ranger School. Y'all, it wasn't 5 minutes later, sweetie got a call from the sergeant major. His tone had changed, like only the butt-chewing of an angry general can bring about. Ms. Williams, he said, I'm real sorry about that last phone call, and we'll get that pay issue resolved today. Make sure it gets to you ASAP. Again, I'm really sorry. I would like to believe that the general was standing over him while he called. So here we are today. My son's a major, I'm a colonel. Neither one of us has a better story about squaring anybody away than Sweetie does. Listen, my sweet Charlene, she had really been pushed too far. She came back with a passion. She got something done about it. I tell you that story because it's lighthearted, but I'm getting back to the serious point that in our culture that we have today, in the things that you and I are facing as conservatives, in the craziness that's been pushed upon us by progressive counterculture, I mean, they're pushing and pushing and pushing. It's as if they have no measure of the fact that there is a vast swath of America that has been pushed just about to their limits. Well, they can easily find themselves on the opposite end of the pushing when good-natured folks decide they've been pushed just too far. I'm here to say that some good, quiet folks need to find their backbone. Let it be known they've been pushed too far. So this next week at the polls, that's our swing play. We have got to capture the momentum. And the only way to do that is for good, solid, salt-of-the-earth, well-meaning, and often unassuming folks to go from being the pushy to the pusher. You got to go full-on sweetie against the sergeant major mode, that's what I'm saying. That's what it's going to take to retake our country. That's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, I love that story, by the way. If you ever see her out at one of our events or something like that, ask her about it. She'll know exactly what story we're talking about. Sweetie and the sergeant major. What the reality is, though, it's a microcosm of what I'm talking about on the big picture. The truth of the matter is, we have been pushed and pushed and pushed, and you can only get pushed so far before the quiet people decide to get loud. Time to get loud, people. Time to go vote. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Got a bunch of text messages dropping in already. Text lines are open, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it. Same number for both. So I'm serious about what I said a minute ago about pushing back. I mean, we cannot give them any quarter now. We can't. They're going to lie. I'm talking about the left. They're going to lie. They're going to do everything they can to tell you that what you believe is not worth believing, and then they'll insult you when you do believe it anyway. They're going to do all that they can to tell you that what's right is now wrong and wrong is now right. But I look at it and think, okay, if we all just stop letting them say it, and I don't mean like you're going out there and you're roughing them up. I'm just saying just look them in the eye and go, how about no? And just how about I don't care about your freaking pronouns. How about no? No, we're not going to have your gay pride flag in the public school classroom. I'm sorry. No. No, we're not going to actually be forced to buy an electric vehicle. How about no? I'm not going to retool my entire business around your pandemic shutdowns. How about no? I mean, if we start saying no to some of the madness, at some point they won't know what to do. And I believe that that's going to have to happen. But I got a great rant. Somebody sent me this morning. We have time for that? It's about a minute and a half long, isn't it?
It's only a minute 10.
Minute 10? Mm-hmm. Okay. So do you know who this guy is by chance?
I saw his name on Instagram, but I don't have it up right now. I don't think he's a popular guy. I think, you know, this video of his just got rolling.
Just got rolling?
Yeah.
Well, he got rolling. So yeah. So I love this. This guy is sitting in his car wearing a cowboy hat, looking at obviously his phone camera, and he's like, okay. And he just starts going. And I don't know if he was reading a script or just rolling, but he did it perfectly. Now, there's one word at the end. And so the bottom line is the FTC is going to find me.
I bleeped it out. Don't worry.
Okay. If not, you've got a red button over there that we rarely have to use. Okay. So let's just for grins, let's just play it. Go ahead.
So the left keeps calling the Trump Vance ticket weird. Yeah. The party that tells us they can't define what a woman is, that boys can have periods, men can breastfeed, and a woman doesn't need anything from a man to get pregnant is calling them weird. That logic takes a lot of balls. There's no reason to bring Michelle Obama into this, but the people that preach climate change and yet build their mansions on the beach and jet around in private planes, the people that want to kill their unborn babies, shout their abortions, hate the nuclear family, want you to believe that you're weird. Yeah, the people that mask up alone in an automobile, socially distanced, hugged grandma through saran wrap, put their kids behind plexiglass and waved through a window at a nursing home while grandpa breathed his last, and then they willingly lined up to be living lab rats while Big Pharma tested a mass medical experiment on them are going to tell me that I'm weird. The people that call rioting and burning down cities peaceful protesting, they find racism, sexism, and hatred in every single thing. They dye their hair purple, get offended by pronouns, and think there's 247 genders and fret over cow farts, want me to believe that I'm the weird one. These are the people that drink out of paper straws, plug their car into a wall, eat bugs, call obesity beautiful, fight for a man's right to piss next to a woman, and expect the government to run their life from cradle to grave and name their kids dumb like Apple. I think I'll be the weird one. Okay, love you. God bless.
That may be one of the most epic, somewhat crass, epic rants I have ever heard.
That pretty much sums it up right there.
Yeah. Hard to add anything to it. I mean, I keep thinking, okay, what did he miss on the list? No, he got that too. Okay. Oh, no, he got it. Yeah. I'm just running down my checklist of stuff that I have grievances about, and he nailed them all in a minute and 10 seconds.
Yep. That was perfect.
It was perfect. That was very much perfect. All right. Listen, we got a number of things to cover. We're going to come back and get some text messages, and we'll jump right into Dipper number one, the economic wrecking ball. That's the economy. It's the top issue in voters' minds for next week. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation, and this one, Alabama. Y'all, I'm talking about this show goes like, way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. Miss Wanda from Somerville says, today is my husband Scott Vaughn's 61st birthday. He's a Right Side ruffian from day one. Happy birthday to Scott Vaughn. Give me some applause for Scott Vaughn. Thank you very much. Happy birthday to you, Scott. Wanda, thanks for letting us know. Melinda from Decatur says, Phil, I'm working at the polls on Tuesday. Good for you. So I attended the class required of all the workers. During the class, we were told everyone needs a photo ID. Yes. One of the slides that we had to study, I guess, specifically said in a foreign national ID is to be accepted as a valid ID. This seems strange, but according to the class leader, there should not be more than 60 of these, and most likely we won't see any of these on election day. I've called the Secretary of State, and I was told to send an email. A foreign national is not a citizen. Where's Kay Ivey? I called her too, but her mailbox is full. Wow. Melinda, I'm not sure I have an answer for you, unless what we're talking about is there are people who have been given their citizenship, but they have not had a chance to get a Alabama ID yet. I don't know the answer. There could be a number of scenarios, but if you find out, you let us know, all right? I'm curious. John from Huntsville. Okay, John, go back to texting, please. Just go back to texting. Instead of typing on a computer, taking a picture of a computer, sending us a picture of your computer. But he says, Phil, awesome monologue. Also, did you hear? North Korean soldiers are soon to join Russian forces to fight against Ukraine. By the way, JP, there's two football games on the Right Side Ruffian Pick'em group. All right. Thank you.
Sorry. I'll answer that for JP on sports. Okay, I'll give my predictions.
Good. There. Good. We got something on. Okay. Thank you, John from Harvest. We appreciate that. And we'll check into it right now. Go ahead and check with Birmingham also. If you're listening to us, by the way, we understand that the signal is down at...
Well, it says only the AM on the AM. So only the on FM, AM? The FM may be working, but he said the AM signal is currently down.
All right. If you're listening to us on 101.1 out of Birmingham, I want to know if that's okay. So just let us know if we're down. If we're down in both places, it's us. If we're down in one, it's them. Ruminating Rocker from Flint Creek says... Remember the clock spring forward and fall back. When you get this old, you've heard them all. Okay. Yes. And by the way, I'm ready to lock the clock and not change it anymore. Mike from Florence says, Phil, I'm extremely mild-mannered, easygoing. I've always said, though, that you don't want to be the one to push the last button. Yeah, that's a great line. I love that. Very few have seen what happens when someone does. Where a smart aleck is usually in fun and good humor, the beast comes out, takes full advantage of it. I publicly shamed a boss or two on my way out the door with truth being my ammunition. Wow, Mike. I hear it. Chris from Gadsden says, when talking about what's happening in the world, just remember, Oceania has always been at war with Eurasia. It has always been at war with East Asia from the book 1984. Nice. Kim from Danville, love the opening monologue. Thank you, Kim. I appreciate that. Says, reminds me of my mom back in 2009. Initially declined the honor guard for my brother's funeral in a rural Danville, Alabama cemetery, but after multiple phone calls, she did finally get what she wanted. Good for her. Good for her and well-deserved, and I'm sorry she had to fight for it. And then Raven from Russellville says, Colonel, as a graduate of the John Wayne School for Wayward Boys, I can tell you this darn sure. He said, it isn't the same nation that I put on a uniform for. My oath to the Constitution stands. De oppresso liber. That's right, sir, to liberate the oppressed, and right now that's us. By the way, Coleman, Bo from Coleman says we're up on 101.1, so it's definitely Huntsville. So tell them to square themselves away, JP.
Also, if anybody is listening to the live stream, if you could text them, let us know the live stream's going good. We'd appreciate that.
You can text Charlene on that.
Sure.
All right. Wait, listen, here's the thing. I got to do this first dipper because coming up top of the hour, we're going to have John Wall on with us. So I got to get a few things in here in the next 20 minutes. The number one issue on the polls about what people think is the top concern of voters, it goes back and forth. It has been going back and forth now for about a year between the economy and illegal immigration. The economy, illegal immigration, the economy. Right now, according to the polls, the economy is number one, but that could change tomorrow. I mean, just wait and watch. The matter that we have in front of us, though, is that the economy is a huge issue to voters. It just is. So that being said, I decided to go ahead and pull some things together to talk about what these Democrats do to the economy. I mean, we just had a report out today, a jobs report, that said that basically it's been an epic failure, that we are looking at a jobs report that only shows 12,000 jobs created. It's like I've got an article right here from Fox. The CEO of a job board reacts to this report, says it's the worst job report he's ever seen. That is, and it's a red flag for 2025. It's a massive jobs miss. And it's being overseen by the woman who's vice president that wants to be your president. Do we have any reason to believe that on day one, she'll change things? No, she won't. I mean, they literally just revised the Labor Department's jobs report for October, just the 1 month, to reveal that only 12,000 jobs were added to the economy. They had expected 113,000. It came out as 12,000. That's a massive, shocking difference. What these people have done to the economy is anything but criminal. Keep checking the text, or brother, we're getting some new stuff in from the live stream. Looks like it's good now. I can give you any number of things we could talk about. The energy sector, we can talk about paying people to stay at home. We can talk about crushing regulation. But I thought what I'd do is just pick one. Just pick one aspect of economic issues. And I'm gonna choose the auto industry. The auto industry has been ransacked by Democrats in the last 4 years. What they have done to what has always been one of the harbingers, one of the bedrocks of our industrial base has been our auto industry. So much so that the auto industry is part of what helped win World War II. The U.S. auto industry and industrial base altogether is a big part of what won that war. fast forward, and you're looking at a Democrat Party right now that believes it's a plaything for them to manipulate for an agenda. It doesn't work that way. In a consumer-based free market economy, you don't just have agendas and do whatever you feel like. The electric vehicle push by government has ransacked the auto industry. Those people don't deserve a second attempt. They don't deserve a second bite at that apple. So we got a piece off of justthenews.com. Dateline 2 days ago. Ford Motor Company continues posting huge losses on its electric lines. Automakers are reversing course. Ford Motor Company on Monday of this week announced it was posting a loss of $1.22 billion on its electric vehicle line. That's just for this quarter. That brings the company's losses on EVs in the first 9 months of the year to $3.7 billion this year. In 2023, Ford lost $4.7 billion on EV sales. In 2022, it lost $2.2 billion. What you're looking at there is you're looking at almost $11 billion in losses by Ford alone in the 3 years since the Biden administration got crazy on its EV push. They estimate the company loses, Ford does, they estimate the company loses $58,000 on each EV it sells. That's nuts. That is not sustainable. Well, of course it's not sustainable. That's why they're backing off. Article goes on to say, across the board, many automakers envisioned that consumers would clamor to buy EVs. All the automakers had to do was build them. If you build them, they will buy. Well, it's not working out that way. Let me tell you what it is. It's all government. All right, listen to this. This article points out the top three reasons why the EV market push is not panning out. Now, I'm not saying EVs don't work. I'm not saying EVs are bad in and of themselves. What I'm saying is you can't mandate a change in the market to fit an agenda and expect it to work. All right. By the way, check the Shane Daddy text at the top there. Number one reason. Political pressure. This article cites the number one reason for automakers to retool their entire, you know, production strategies and output around political pressure. That's amazing. When you see that much political pressure, he said the companies pursued a multi-pronged effort, but they were told that they had to do certain things, and all said and done, it ain't working. Number two. Automakers' EV crazes, they said, were based upon promises from state and federal governments about how much charging infrastructure was going to be built out. Oh, it's kind of like saying, we're going to build a combustion engine car, but there's no gas stations anywhere. That's what they're facing. People can't take trips. People are scared that they'll get out there and right now we're looking at, right, a recent Harvard Business School study found that 20% of all public charging ports that are out there are not working. $7.5 billion was set aside in the so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill for building out chargers. $7.5 billion 2 years ago. They have built seven by this summer. Seven. Pete Buttigieg wants you to know that it's hard to do these things and you shouldn't expect it to happen overnight. Seven? You're going to go with that? You built seven? With seven, that's $1 billion each, dude. Seven. So number one, political pressure. Number two, promises from federal and state governments about infrastructure. And number three, once again, government. Automakers were relying upon subsidies. Their industry was being underwritten. They were being told, we'll credit you, we'll pay you, we'll grant you, we'll do all the things. You'll have money from the government. Don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. So they're getting massive corporate welfare. I understand economic offerings. I understand states enticing companies to come and build where they live. But this is not that. This is corporate welfare. And even that has not caused them to survive. So what has happened with the auto industry? Stellantis CEO, Carlos Tavares, he said it's a bloodbath. He said companies are already making so little money on their EV lines that it's like a race to the bottom right now. Volkswagen's closing plants in Germany. Ford delayed the launch of its electric SUV at the Oakville plant in Ontario, Canada. They also delayed plans to build up more electric F-150s. General Motors had planned to produce up to 300,000 EVs this year. They've lowered that to 200,000. That's a one-third drop in their production projections. And then they just totally delayed the launch of their first EV Buick altogether. They're just like, we're not doing it right now. This is an epic rewrite of the industry. But what it also did, it's not just the automakers. How about this? Hertz, justthenews.com again. Hertz, the rental car company, invested heavy. They just lost $1 billion. It's gotten so bad because no one wanted to rent an electric vehicle that they've decided to sell off their fleet. They're selling off 20,000 vehicles. They're getting rid of them. They had also announced plans to buy 100,000 EVs from Tesla, and they had to go ahead and back off of that. So right now, Hertz stock price is down 73% over this time last year. Holy cow. All of it because of the top three indicators I just gave you that were all government-related. Political pressure, lack of infrastructure, despite promises from government, and subsidies are crushing the auto industry and the people that are a part of it. When we get back from this break, I'll tell you about a little bit more on that, to include one of the reasons why we're not seeing more electric vehicle infrastructure being built out is because there are Biden policies that make it impossible to actually build them. What I thought he paid for them. I thought it was all going to happen. These people don't deserve a second chance, y'all. Economic wrecking ball, that's what they are. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Hey, but don't forget, by the way, coming up top of the hour, we'll be getting on the phone with Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall, one of 50 guys in the nation that has his job. So we'll get the latest from him on what he's seeing, hearing, sensing in the polls, the elections coming up, and we'll talk about it. I got somebody held on the line during the breaks. Let me go to the phones, and I hope you're still there. Chris from Athens. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I just wanted to comment on your the stuff about the EVs you were talking about a minute ago. I work for an employer, and there are certain metropolitan areas up north that we have put a lot of chargers in those areas for EV vehicles.
Yeah,
they haven't really made it to the Huntsville area yet. But to your point with Biden and all his regulations, it has really tied our hands as far as, you know, really, really pushing to help people with the EVs. Mostly from where I'm at, it's Teslas more so than anything else, but. Yeah, the Biden administration seems to hate the industry that I work in. So I really hope that that'll change a lot if Donald Trump gets elected. But well, I did want to let you know that there are people that heavily agree with you, even if they're not in the automotive market, about what you're saying.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And listen, let me ask you, if you know offhand, are there any certain regulations you could think of that stymie your ability to do the things that are supposed to be done?
Not that I feel like I'm at liberty to say.
Okay.
I know that's kind of shady, but I want to try to keep it. Yeah,
no, I don't want to put you in a bad light.
I don't want to say, yeah, exactly. I'm not a spokesman necessarily, but I do know a little bit about some of the stuff that goes on with that.
Well, I appreciate it. And Chris, thanks for affirming some things that we're talking about. So I appreciate you calling in and holding on during the break, man.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thanks. I love your show, man. Keep up the good work.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you. Let me tell you one of the things I think he's maybe talking about. At the very least, it's one of the things that's out there. I've got a story here that just boggles the mind. I mean, this is one of those solid jackassery moments. All right, some serious jackassery. So the Biden administration's got $1.7 billion $7 billion. To build charging stations, right? Except they're not able to get them built. Why? Why is it so hard? Well, it appears that, according to the Washington Beacon, in 2021, the Biden administration, who did pledge they would build 500,000 electric vehicle stations by the year 2030, has only built 7 so far. Well, that's in 3 years they've built 7. They're not on track to meet their goal. The regulation that's getting in the way, pray tell, what could it be, Phil? What is in the way? Well, shortly after taking office, it appears the president signed an executive order that mandated that the beneficiaries of all of 40% of all federal climate and environmental programs have to come from quote-unquote underserved communities. What does that mean? You're going to have to be a minority-owned business. You're going to have to be a woman-owned business. You're going to have to be an LGBTQ-owned business. You're going to have to be in a certain area. You're going to have to – I mean, it, literally what they did was they confined it so much that now they can't get them built. Why do we let these people take office? Well, I take that back. You and I didn't let them take office. But you look at it and go – these people are an economic wrecking ball. That's a classic example right there. They passed a bill they didn't have the money for. In the trillion-dollar infrastructure bill, they set aside $7-plus billion just to build 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations. It's taken 3 years, and they've only built 7. And oh, by the way, one of the biggest impediments to accomplishing what they said they would do with our taxpayer dollars is that they have their own rules that say that only certain people can build them, and there's not enough of those people to build them, and so what do you do? Look, when I'm saying this is an economic wrecking ball, that's what they are. They do not deserve a second chance. Coming up next, after the break, Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number 2 on a Friday. So I'm spending my time today talking about what are deemed to be the top issues that voters care about. We spent the first half hour or so talking about what I call the economic wrecking ball. The economy has been just ransacked by Democrats who apparently have no concept of what it means to have a free market. They don't understand the ideas of running a business. Most of them have never done anything in the private sector, like, at all. So the economic wrecking ball is number one. In a few minutes, we're going to talk about the second most important topic. Sometimes it's the first, depending on the poll. That's immigration. The illegal immigration situation has got a lot of people on edge. It's straining our resources nationwide. And it shouldn't have to be this way, and it's because these chuckleheads that have been in office for the last 4 years have just been able to do anything they wanted to do and get away with it. Well, listen, there's one guy who's heading up the fight for Republicans in the state of Alabama. He's one of 50 people in the nation that has his job. That's our friend John Wall, who is the chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, and he's on the line right now. Chairman Wall, how are you doing?
I am doing well. It's good to be on the show.
Outstanding. Well, I appreciate you making time. It's like we're counting down now, brother. We're almost there.
It's hard to believe we're, what, 4 days out? from what is and genuinely is one of the most important elections in the entire history of our country.
Yes.
As I'm out on a speaking trail and I'm talking to people, for me, it's pretty clear.
Well,
it's freedom itself. This is the battle between for freedom and for a battle between light and darkness.
Well, it really is. And John, by the way, your connection sounds a little rough. If you're on a Bluetooth, we may have to get you on a regular phone there. But I agree with you. I mean, I think it is a good versus evil. I think it's a destruction of our traditional values and concerns, or it's going to be about a restoration of them. But there's hardly any in between.
There really isn't. The political parties grow more and more divided, and especially as the Democrat Party gets more radical in their views, it really does make this makes it very clear. There is a very clear line in the sand, all the way from the transgender indoctrination of our children to the economy, to foreign policy, and of course, you were just talking about the southern border and how important that is in every aspect, whether that's bringing down crime or keeping our communities successful, worry about losing free housing or losing benefits or losing things for American citizens that have put their time, their life, their work into our country, and just surrendering that to people who don't have any investment in our country.
Well, let me ask you this. We're hearing good things about the polls. I mean, it doesn't mean we let up. You got to keep a foot on the gas all the way to the finish line. But what are you seeing and hearing right now? And what are your brethren and sistren who chair the parties from other states? What are they saying?
Well, you know, as well as being chairman here in Alabama, I'm also chairman of the Southern Region for the RNC.
Right.
In fact, I'm in Georgia right now as we speak, headed to an event with volunteers from Alabama who are over here door knocking. And all the numbers we're seeing are incredibly good right now. This is the first time the entire campaign that Donald Trump has been up in all seven swing states. Now, some of those are very thin margins, razor thin margins. But if Donald Trump continues his trend from 2016 to 2020 of overperforming polling, I see several paths to victory on election night for Donald Trump, and I think that that path for Kamala Harris grows smaller every day as we approach November 5th.
Yeah, I mean, you can sense it. I mean, I think you and I talked the other night. You and I were both at the Eagle Forum dinner the other night. Great night. And I seem to recall that us having a discussion that you can feel it in the air. There's times when you see it in the polls. There's times when you see it, you know, in a tangible way. But sometimes you can also just sense momentum, and that's where I feel like we are right now. We're truly sensing it. You can almost feel it.
Now, you know, and I think you're right. The American people can feel it. I know Donald Trump feels it. You know, if you watch him, I've actually had a chance to travel with his team a little bit over the last couple of weeks, and you know, see several of his speeches. And you can see it in his demeanor. He is enjoying this race right now.
Yeah.
Like, he's having fun. He's making jokes. The momentum is on that side. And look, we're less than a week out, trending up and in the lead in most states. This is exactly where you want to be in a presidential race. And it really, you can sense that momentum, that excitement. And I think this is, look, this is not just, this is about the Republican Party. This is about Donald Trump. This is about, you know, freedom, all these things we're talking about. But this is also a referendum on the Democrat Party and the policies of the Democrat Party. They better know, and I think this is, the American people are about to send a clear message that the Democrat Party has failed the people of America. And these incredibly socialistic, government-heavy, freedom-robbing policies that have destroyed our economy and have really made Americans' lives harder in just about every area are not acceptable. And even with the press, even with the mainstream media and big tech and censorship and demonizing Donald Trump and Republicans for 10 years straight, they're going to lose this election. And I think that sends a clear message. And I think that message needs to be sent. And to be honest with you, I'm proud of the American people. I think they have seen through the media, they've seen through these lies, and they're voting what they know is right. And that's for the American dream.
That's a great encapsulation of the whole thing. And I saw something too. Babylon B, I got to give them credit. I don't know who writes their stuff, but they're geniuses. But Babylon B had one a while ago.
I would hire their guy.
I know. Get them on the show with me sometime. But Babylon B had one a little while ago. This came out a little while ago that said that Democrats are now fearful as polls show that Republicans are outpacing the margin of cheating. So basically, instead of the margin of error, it's the margin of cheating. And that's, but I.
Margin of cheating. Look, that's just about right. That really is. But like, I love Elon Musk, his speech at Madison Square Garden, where he said, "We have to win by a bigger margin than you know what."
Yeah.
And the whole crowd burst out laughing because we all know what. And we all know that these people, whatever you want to call them, the deep state, the Democrat Party, the elite, they would do anything to stop Donald Trump at this point.
Yeah.
And you better bet that includes cheating at the ballot box.
Well, Georgia had its issues in the past. It seems like Georgia took some steps to get things sort of in line and appears to be running a pretty smooth sailing ship right now. But around the nation, we're hearing little things like Pennsylvania, Nevada. Are you seeing problem issues around the nation that we should sort of fix our eyes on?
You know, I do have some concerns, and I think Pennsylvania is near the top of the list. You know, there was that little snafu, and I would still like to know how this happened, where ABC had the election results at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
For Pennsylvania. I know that's probably just something that was left up from the last election or whatever, but it highlights a serious problem, and that's that in some of these states, we don't have confidence. We know nothing was done from 4 years ago because there were Democrat legislators or Democrat governors that stopped it. So I think there is reason to be concerned. And I think the important thing is election integrity, that we make sure we have people watching the watchers. Every single poll needs to have someone there, a poll watcher. And I know in Georgia, my region, right, within the Republican Party, we're sending over 200 volunteers from Alabama to poll watch in Georgia, in Fulton County, in these key areas. Because, and I've already told them, the party will pay for your hotel room. Do not plan on coming home that night. You need to stay there. It's not over at 7 o'clock. You need to stay there and make sure this is watched. As late, as long as they're counting, you stay there, and we'll make sure you're taken care of, because we can't take this for granted, and we need to make sure. Transparency is a good thing in government, and we want to make sure this election process is transparent and secure.
Well, and absolutely. I mean, the people of this nation have got to have a restored sense of confidence in the processes that elect their leadership, and that's, and I don't mean like later. I mean now they've got to have that. That being said, John, you said something.
Right.
You said
right.
Something about staying there overnight. It's not going to be over right away. In your own estimation, I mean, it may just be yours, or maybe you've heard something. How long do you think it's going to take for us to get actual results with certified election results to know who the president is?
Well, you know, there is a chance that Donald Trump wins by a big enough margin, because, like I was saying, if he continues, he's in the lead, and if he continues his trend. From the last two cycles, he could win by a big enough margin with enough states that even these states that have been slow counting their ballots, we don't even need them.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be pessimistic here. There is a chance that we go election night, but there's also a very real chance that especially states like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Georgia take a day or two for the results to be completely come in. And so that's when, though, that's what I was talking about. That's when we really kick into gear on the transparency side. We can't let boxes of ballots or tracks come in late. Like, every ballot, we should know where it comes from. We should know the chain of command to get there, and that it is, whether it is or is not, a legitimate ballot. And I think a lot of those safeguards have been put in place. It's kind of one of those things, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah.
The Republican Party is not going to let this happen again, at least here in the Southern region.
Well, and I think the Southern region is less the issue, although I hate the fact that Georgia sort of became more purple and problematic. But nonetheless, I think that election integrity issues are getting resolved in the Southeast. I don't want to see Congress step in and just run elections. I don't. But I tell you what, though, I would love to get back to a paper ballot and a voting day, and even give it a national holiday status so people can get off work and go vote.
I agree. Look, we have holidays for Juneteenth. We have holidays for all kinds of stuff. Election Day deserves to be a national holiday. Make sure people have the chance, the time to go vote, and then not be stuck just after work in a long line. No, I agree with you. Make this a priority. Make elections a priority. We want to see higher turnout. We want to see people fulfilling their civic duty, and it is a duty to vote. I talked to so many people, and it's so important that people let their voice be heard, because without that, without good people getting involved, you condemn yourself to be ruled by tyrants. And it is so important that every person who loves America and loves the American dream and freedom gets out and votes this election cycle.
Well, John Wall, thank you again for everything that you've done for the cause. I know you have the hardest working, longest hours, and least paid position in the world. But it's all coming down to Tuesday. And by the way, we're doing that live stream here at Right Side Media on election night, and I sure hope we can get you on the air with us that night.
I am very hopeful that that's going to work out, and I'm going to look forward to that, and it's always a pleasure to be on the show.
All right. Thanks, John. That's Chairman John Wall from the Alabama Republican Party, who is also, by the way, the chairman of the Southeastern Regional Republicans. Listen, you're hearing it from the horse's mouth. He sees it. But if you noticed, he's got 200 volunteers in Georgia, and he's headed over to Georgia himself right now. That's what it takes, y'all. That is what it takes. All right, we're taking a break right now. We'll come right back, catch up on some text messages, and jump into Dipper number 2, Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation every single day. Y'all, I'm talking about, we are saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, hey, listen, a bunch of y'all texted in, by the way, to let us know that one of our affiliates was down in Huntsville. We appreciate that very much. It is back up. That was 770 AM out of Huntsville, the Cumulus Broadcasting Station. Keep in mind, too, you can always get us in a variety of ways. Our signals overlap from various stations, 101.1 FM, 92.5 FM. We also have 770 AM and 850 AM out of Birmingham. And then you can always stream online. I mean, help me out here. We can stream through Twitter, Rumble,
Twitch, YouTube, and they can always go to rightsidemedia.org, go to the live tab, and find it from there as well.
Sweet. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of which, that reminds me, I hadn't talked about it yet. Tuesday night's election night, and we are doing a live stream from our brand new Right Side studio. Pretty proud of it. And I'm also pretty proud of the fact that I've got guys like JP and Butters who have been putting that thing together with the tech side. You guys about got it strung together now, right?
I mean, we're just tying up loose ends tomorrow, actually, at this point. So.
A little bubble gum and baling wire, put the last of it together, right?
Pretty much. It's just about ready to go. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see how this turns out. And I'm excited to unveil to all the Right Side Ruffians the new podcast studio, which yeah. I think they will very much appreciate it.
Yeah, I agree. I think so, too. I'm real stoked. Yeah, we're real proud of it. It's been one of those things you have to build it out a bit at a time. And so it's everything from ordering the new neon sign with the Right Side logo to, you know, JP and I are down here on a Saturday putting felt on the walls, you know, mm-hmm. it's everything. And then, but yeah, it looks great. And it's actually working great. So Tuesday night, election night, it's... JP, Birdman, Butters, and myself are all doing a live stream from the new studio on election results. We have some guest callers that'll be calling in. But it'll be 7:30 to 9:30. And probably best place to stream it, just go to our website, rightsidemedia.org. Rightsidemedia.org. And then, you know, just check it out.
Excited to start using the podcast studio for podcasts as well. Not just this live stream.
There's all kinds of things happening around here, man. All kinds of things. A few text messages I have not gotten yet. By the way, we answered a bunch of y'all saying, hey, we were down on 870, but we are 770, but we appreciate you letting us. And anyway, always do that because sometimes we can't tell. And the old rule and thumb here is if we're down on more than one station, it's us. If we're down on one station, it's them. David from Huntsville says the U.S. House is the one in danger and the close House races are cheaper, easier to make a difference. Hakeem Jeffries better not become the speaker. Boy, isn't that the truth? Absolutely. I got Chiho from Rainbow City. Oh, she was checking in about the 101.1. Thank you, Chiho. Appreciate you. Steve from Coleman was letting us know 101 was up. We've got Ken from Rimlap says, well, I guess I'm a Nick Bosa fan now. What a great photobomb. What are we? Oh, that's the, yes. I'm sorry. I just totally, that was totally off topic. I didn't know where we were. Okay. Hey, by the way, we're going to start back on this next Dipper when we come back in a minute on the Immigration Nation. But just so you know, a bit of breaking news. Trump, you know, in Trump fashion, he said something rather inartful today about Liz Cheney. But if you take it all in context, what he said was Liz Cheney has been, her family, the Cheney family, has been a part of starting more wars that have had American citizens under the guns than anybody. And he said she ought to have to face the guns. Well, now it's all the rage. It's all the rage. It's violent rhetoric against Liz Cheney. It should be disqualifying. Listen, grow up, Democrats. Just freaking grow up. Stop trying to grab little things and make big things out of them. Go run your race, and if you have a policy worth talking about it, please talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right, and we'll be back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I'm talking about Alabama, y'all. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gaston, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in just for good measure. So several text messages real quick. One came from, oh gosh, who was this from? This was from Brian from Bluntsville. He sent in a meme as a picture of an electric charging station. It says, it's a picture of an electric car charging stations that are popping up everywhere. Here's an interesting fact, he says. That's the 350-kilowatt generator uses 12 gallons of diesel fuel per hour, takes 3 hours to fully charge a car to get 200 miles. That's 3,600. That's 36 gallons for 200 miles, 5.6 mile per gallon. Proof you can't fix stupid. Yeah, it's a charging station mated to a large generator is all it is. That's unreal. Unbelievable. Georgia from Summerton texted in and just wanted us to know her husband is in the UAB hospital and they've been trying to figure out, and it's a long text. So did you already read this one? What's the summation of it real quick, Jamie?
She's struggling to find a way to get her husband to vote and said that she's just struggling to find the resources to do so. It feels like she's not getting much help. And said she's tired with these leftists. Nobody gives a dang, and nobody helps. So,
well, George, I am sorry to hear you're going through that, and blessings on you. Lord bless Georgia and her husband, and I pray that his healing is complete and quick in Jesus' name. But God, I just also ask you to give them a sense of relief. So, Georgia, listen, I don't know what to tell you about this. I mean, the hospital's not going to be there to help you vote, but you can probably hire an ambulance. But what I'm saying is, if he's bedridden or hospital bound. The hospitals also can't just operate against medical advice. It's going to have to be a combination of what's good for him and getting him to the polls. So blessings on you. Marvin from Addison says, Dems checking to see if Trump broke the law with his comments on Cheney. Sure they are. Of course they are. How about this? Maybe we should check and see whether or not Joe Biden actually broke the law when he had his official transcript of his garbage comments the other day changed. It's unreal. And oh, by the way, Trump didn't break the law. He said something that if you take the whole thing in context, it's not what they're trying to say it is.
Well, I don't even know what they're trying to say he broke the law with. Like, what part of his comment are they honing in on?
Violent rhetoric, trying to incite violence because he's a violent person. Keep in mind, this is what Liz Cheney's been doing for years. He's a violent man. He calls for violence. And now Liz Cheney with her hangdog face is all sad because she got picked on. And
so I guess the part where he said she wouldn't be a warmonger if all the guns were pointed at her sort of is what he said in the speech. I think they're probably trying to twist out. And
something like that.
Obviously, he's not saying to attack Liz Cheney, but,
exactly right.
It's something that needs to be said of, these people in Washington who constantly want to start foreign wars and bankrupt the nation,
Yeah. And of the two of them, which one's been shot?
Yeah, exactly.
Donald Trump. All right, let's jump on immigration for a minute because I'm gonna get to the top of the hour and not have any time left because we're going to JP on sports at the top of the hour. Listen, the number two issue, and depending on the polls, it can sometimes be the number one issue, is illegal immigration. The left will constantly downplay your concerns. They will. The left will constantly downplay your concerns, even to the point of mocking it. Now, I went ahead and pulled some liberal media sites. Phil, did you really? I did. That's the risk that I will take to bring you all of the information you need to have those water cooler conversations. So the first article I pulled here as a classic example of the way the left reports things comes from a piece called ELPAI, E-L-P-A-I-S, ELPAI. They go ahead and say, Trump's hard line on illegal immigration pushes Kamala Harris's party to the right. Okay. Pushes them to the right? You mean, what they really mean to say is, made her actually do something for once. Says, the arrival of hundreds of thousands of immigrants and major U.S. citizens since spring of 2022. By the way, excuse me, author Maria Antonia Sanchez-Vallejo. She's a hyphenated name, JP. Hyphenated name.
Like you said, I don't trust people with hyphenated names.
Hyphenated names. Don't trust them. Anyway, the arrival of hundreds of thousands, it's millions, thank you, of immigrants in major U.S. cities in spring 2022 is conditioning next Tuesday's elections on both sides of the political spectrum. The Republican discourse, she says, which associates migrants with insecurity and describes them as drainers of scarce resources, listen. Here's the bottom line. One thing she's reporting correctly, despite the fact that she couches it all in this ain't what you think it is rhetoric, yada, yada, yada. She does point out 90% of Republicans say that immigration is a very important issue. 68% of independents think it's a very important issue. Only 50% of Democrats think it's a very important issue. But that's still, and if you combine that together, 90% of Republicans, let's take what voted last time. was it 78 million? Roughly 80 million people voted Republican last time. 90% of that, you're looking at somewhere around, let's go ahead and just go ahead and say 72 million. 68% of independents, I don't know the numbers. 50% of Democrats, let's say they had roughly 80 million also. Only 50%, that's still 100. So now we're at 122 million-ish. 112 million, I'm sorry. That's just voters. Just voters. I mean, it's overwhelming that America wants this dealt with. Now, she goes on to say, with his well-known xenophobic narrative, oh, here we go. His well-known xenophobic narrative, Trump said he plans to carry out mass deportations from Times Square, not far from Times Square, which he claims has been taken over by undocumented migrants. In 2 years, but so she downplays, and this is what the left does. They downplay it, and then they feel a little guilty, so they got to say something that's real. So he's xenophobic. He's calling for mass deportations, of all things. Right near Times Square, of all things. And then, oh, by the way, points out that, well, they have had 210,000 foreigners arrived in the Big Apple. But she points out they were arriving on buses chartered by Republican governors. So, what? Anyway, Chicago, Boston, and Denver have all gotten 50,000 each, but here's the thing that gets it. In her view, the illegal immigrants, they are the, here's a quote, they are the perfect scapegoat, sacrificial victims on the altar of votes, no matter what party they are from. First of all, they're not from a party. They're illegal immigrants. They are not party members of any kind. Why? Because they can't vote. They're illegals. They're not scapegoats. They're just breaking the law to get here, and it's straining our resources. And then sacrificial victims? How about this? They're not victims. They're the criminals. They're the ones who came here illegally. They're the ones who created the issue. We didn't invite them here. Well, I guess the Democrats did. But the reality is, they still waded across the river or, you know, crawled across the fence or, you know, came around the borderlines. Anyway, the bottom line is this. That's that. All right, that's El Pi. How about Atlantic? Phil, did you go to the Atlantic? I did. The Atlantic wants to talk about Alabama. The Haitians had come to Sylacauga by bus. This whole thing, by the way, is a mocking article. I told you. They will downplay your concerns. They will even mock your concerns. The Haitians came to Sylacauga by bus. Two buses, possibly even three, but certainly more than one. Of this, one resident was sure, as he explained on Facebook, as he'd been told by somebody who saw them unloading in the Walmart parking lot. I mean, the article goes on from there, talking about it's an effort to cripple the welfare state of a small Alabama town. Well, how about this? Stop mocking it and recognize that hundreds of millions of people deeply concerned about this topic. So much so that, as the first liberal article pointed out, it's actually pushing Kamala Harris somewhat to the right. Oh, really? Because if they felt entirely guilt-free on the issue, she wouldn't move at all. The fact that she's posturing in some way, pretending that she's moving to the right, is a clear indication she's worried because they know that hundreds of millions of voting Americans are deeply concerned about this issue. And then there's the Daily Wire. Daily Wire ran an amazing piece. Daily Wire, a national outlet. Headline, overrun by Haitian migrants, these Alabama towns could become the next Springfield. Wow. It's a long article, but it's got some amazing content. Says as van loads of Haitian migrants began arriving over the summer, residents in Alabama started to wonder whether their already swelling community could handle the influx. But wait a minute. I thought they were just like saying silly things on Facebook about what someone told them about seeing them unloading buses in the Walmart parking lot. About these are just the victims. They're just being scapegoated for votes. How about this? The article from Daily Wire says Alabama worries that their cities will become the next Springfield, Ohio, where a large influx of Haitian migrants was accompanied by a surge in crime and traffic accidents. Keep in mind, the city of Springfield, Ohio, a city of just 60,000, I'm sorry, a city of just 40,000, gained 20,000 more illegals. Unbelievable. People are ticked. People are scared. People are beside themselves, and people want this to be fixed. The article from Daily Wire goes on to say, Daily Wire traveled to Athens and spoke to more than a dozen residents, some longtime residents, and some migrants. And the concern is not only that migrants are impacting the lives of those who are already there, but that the lives that the migrants are also incurring when they get there. The Alabama cities of Albertville and Enterprise have seen an increase. Locals are seeking answers about the legal status, but city officials can't find answers from the federal government and have to shift the blame to the Biden-Harris administration. In Albertville, that's just up the road from where JP and I are sitting. In Albertville, 110 Haitian students have joined the school system. The superintendent said, this is complicated. When kids get here, we want to educate them. We'll keep trying to do that, but we need help, and I cannot emphasize that enough, says we don't have enough translators. In Athens, the city school system said that 669 students are classified as English second language. The district had 24 students in the system from Haiti. Superintendent says she has no plans to be able to hire more English second language teachers. How about this, though? Then there's the question of what's happening with one city councilman in Athens who actually owns rental houses, and they're not great. And this one rental house in particular, the migrants who live there say they've been paying $2,000 a month for what amounts to a little small rundown house. $2,000 a month for a 1,200 square foot house. They were recently told their rent would be reduced to $1,500, but Daily Wire tracked down the person who lived there right before them, who was only paying $325 to live there. Why is that happening? Because the federal government is subsidizing the rent. That's why. And because migrants don't know any better, and they're just told, go find a place to live, and they don't want to sleep out in the rain. I mean, I hate to say it, but they're people too. And listen, the whole thing is jacked up, and it shouldn't have to be like this. This article is more in-depth than I can go into right now, but the reality is we have gained attention. Even as Alabama, we have gained attention right now. We have school systems. We have whole communities that are watching what is happening, and the word is on the street right now that more are coming. And then there's the crime factor. When we get back from this break, I'll tell you about the fact that the crime factor has taken on a whole new life again. It's just unbelievable. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, Immigration Nation, that's what we're talking about. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. I mean, like pulling pins on truth grenades. So, by the way, breaking news, it's really not that much of breaking news per se, because these things happen every day right now. But Donald Trump is actually doing a rally as I speak in Warren, Michigan, watching it live on both screens up here in the studio walls. And he just finished talking about the exact thing that I've been talking about, the top two issues. He said he was going to work to fix the economy and fix the southern border. And then right after that, he mentioned the border and talked about the fact that we've got literally criminals coming across the border. That being said, I've got the mayor of a small village near Cincinnati, small village, they call them that, but anyway, called Lachlan, Ohio. The Lachlan mayor, Mark Mason, says that his county officials estimate that they have received somewhere around 3,000 immigrants from Mauritania. 3,000. 3,000 from Mauritania. 3,000, by the way, the village population is only 3,400. 3,400! They just doubled in size for the most part. Just literally, he says, listen, we're strained to the max. He said, our fire and paramedic services have been stressed. They've moved to these apartment complexes. They're packing them into apartments. A lot of the longtime residents have moved out because of multiple fires. It's been caused by their not understanding how to cook on stoves. They use high levels of grease in their cooking. It's caused multiple fires. He said, a lot of people don't want to subject their families to unsafe conditions, these apartment complexes. They've moved out. Working residents have, you know, and they've moved, and these Mauritanians have moved in. And they're just literally 3,000 of them showed up in a community of only 3,200 people in the community. They took in 3,000 immigrants. That's unsustainable. And he says that. At the same time, I'm looking at stories left and right. And by the way, I got a caller on the line, so I'll get to it momentarily. Let me get a little bit more out here. I got a story here from Fox. A suspect was just charged, Dateline yesterday, charged with shooting a Jewish man multiple times on his way to a Chicago synagogue, is a Mauritanian illegal immigrant who was released into the U.S. last year. How about the story from the New York Post? An illegal immigrant who skipped an immigration hearing after being cut loose at the U.S.-Mexico border has now been arrested for raping a 5-year-old girl on Long Island, and cops believe he may have more victims. Where is he from? Honduras. That's Dateline today. How about this one? Fox News, Dateline 2 days ago. Oklahoma's chief education officer sent a demand letter to Vice President Kamala Harris, essentially serving as an invoice, saying that they have incurred $474 million in education costs for illegal immigrants, and he wants to know when the federal government is going to repay it. Y'all, is it any wonder this is a top issue? You got, and by the way, the idea that that liberal article I had earlier just said, well, the crime thing is being overreported. I don't care if it's one crime. If one illegal immigrant commits a crime on an American citizen, it's one crime that never should have happened, because not only should it not have happened as a crime itself, it should not have happened because the criminal should not have even been here. It's unbelievable. I got a call on the line real quick. I'll take it before I run out of time. Badger from Athens. Hey, Badger, how you doing?
Doing good. How are you all today? Happy Friday.
Thank you very much.
I'm doing good. Doing great. Hey, I know you got sports top of the hour, so I'll make this quick about the immigration. Can we set up like I'm not calling it an intern camp or anything like that, but can't we set up a city on the border where they come in, they run all the services, they run all the facilities, they teach their own young English, and as they graduate through the different steps in the city, then they work their way through the process to be allowed to be in the U.S.? Couldn't we do something like that?
Yeah, you know, probably not. And I say that not because I don't think that we have cause to. I think that's because we have some pretty serious constitutional liberties related to freedom of movement. And so I don't know that we can actually do that. Now, they've committed a crime by being here. And so incarceration's sake, yes. But just to say that they're going to be living in camps, I think we'd be opening things up for a... Now, I tell you what we can do. Why don't we press the UN to set up a refugee camp on the southern side of the border like they do everywhere else in the world, and let them handle it that way, and do a remain in Mexico policy, and the UN could set up its refugee camp and take care of the issue like they do in every other country in the world, it seems like. Badger, great question. Got to run, though. We're about to run out of time, so thanks for the call, man.
All right, have a great weekend. Bless you all.
Thank you, buddy. You too. Listen, one of the things we do know is, as I go to the break, the Telegraph had an article. In fact, it was Lee from Huntsville that pointed it out to me, and I wish I had more time for it. But the article is headlined, "If Trump Wins, I'm Not Going to the U.S." There's a 2,000 migrant caravan moving towards the Mexican border right now, but several of them have said, if Trump was in office, they wouldn't be coming. Well, next week, let's see what happens. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Coming up next, JP on sports. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams, here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Welcome to hour number 3 on a Friday. And you know what our new tradition is. We have added to the lineup something that gives you a chance to step aside from politics for a minute and hear somebody who still amazes me with how much knowledge he keeps crammed in his head about sports. And that's our own JP, who, by the way, is the co-host of Off the Bench, which is a sports show on Saturday mornings on The Ump in Huntsville.
Mm-hmm. From 9 to 11 a.m. Come and get your college football fix in right before the college football games start for Saturdays. We go through all top 10 games from that day, and we have a guest picker down the show every day as well. So make sure to tune in this weekend, Off the Bench, 9 to 11 on 103.9 FM, The Ump.
Well, right now, let's do this thing that we've started calling JP on Sports. JP on Sports!
That's great.
All right, we break it up into two segments, and we're going to do the first one we like to call Three and Out. You give us the top three stories, talk through them, tell us why they're the top three, and then we come back from the break and we do the 2-minute warnings. But Three and Out. First one, what do you got?
So there's a big game this weekend between Penn State and Ohio State, number 3 versus number 4 in Happy Valley. Trump will be at the game.
Oh.
Trying to win over Pennsylvania votes, I believe.
I saw somebody said that he had canceled. Is he still
going
to go?
From what I've seen, he's still going. You know, we'll see if he ends up falling through. But I bet his campaign sees that as a great opportunity to shore up Pennsylvania this close to the election. But this is a big game. Like I said, number 3 versus number 4. Ohio State really can't afford to lose another game. I mean, even if they did, they probably could slip in with their two losses being versus number 1 and number 3. But nevertheless, this is a rivalry game. And either coach is, you know, there's been a lot of talk about James Franklin and his inability to win the big game at Penn State. So he is, I believe he's only had three losses within the last 4 or 5 seasons against ranked opponents, and they've all come against Michigan and Ohio State. And he's only 1-9 against Ryan Day while being at Penn State, the last one coming in 2016. So he really needs to get a win against Ohio State. It'll be a wideout game, which I've been to one of those Penn State wideout games. It's something else. It's crazy. It's a crazy atmosphere. So it'll be a fun game to watch, wide out of Penn State versus Ohio State. And for either coach, and Ryan Day too, he's had a lot of hate for not being able to beat Michigan the last couple of years. So if he drops this game to Penn State without even, you know, having two losses before he even gets to the Michigan game, then, you know, he unrightfully so will be on the hot seat, in my opinion. Because Ohio State fans are really, they're really impatient, and Ryan Day is a great coach, but if you can't win the big game, you know, you're going to be on the hot seat with Ohio State fans. So both coaches, this is a big must-win for them in terms of, you know, their career and the security at where they're at.
Okay, so is it Buckeyes or Nittany Lions? What are you thinking?
Man, so I actually have a cousin who plays for Penn State. He's on the special teams at Penn State, and my mom's side of the family is all big, big Penn State. So I feel like I can't pick against Penn State in this game. I think with it being a wideout and one of the hardest environments to play in, a Penn State wideout game, I think Penn State will get the bump. But Drew Allard, the quarterback, got hurt last week in the first half of the game, and he's still questionable if he's going to play in this game. So if he does not play, that will impact things greatly. But from what I've seen, people expect him to play, even if he's not 100%. So something to keep an eye on as well.
And you think Trump's going to sort of ride the middle line and not cheer for one team over the other?
You know, if he's smart, he'll probably cheer for Penn State, since he needs that state more than Ohio State. But he'll probably be neutral, like, you know, as he always is at these games. But
All right. There's 3 and out. There's number 1. What's number 2?
Vandy playing Auburn this weekend.
You see, I'm wearing my bootleg Auburn shirt right now.
So we unplanned wearing an Alabama polo, and he's wearing an Auburn polo today, and we did not plan that, which I thought was funny. But Vandy coming off a loss where they almost beat Texas. They only lost by 3 to Texas after Texas dropped that game to Georgia. So Vanderbilt is proving that this is not the stereotypical Vanderbilt, you know, the bottom of the SEC. I mean, you beat Alabama, number 1 Alabama, you know, that tells enough as it is. But Auburn got an impressive win against Kentucky last week, where their running back Jarquez Hunter ran for over 200 yards. And it's almost like Hugh Freeze found out maybe we should utilize Hunter in the backfield when passing has been an issue this year. So we'll see if they continue that trend against Vanderbilt. But this will be an interesting one because, like I said, Vanderbilt coming off of that loss against Texas where they almost beat them, I still think they're coming off of momentum after that game. And Auburn maybe has found the key to their offense and what works, running the football. So we'll see if they can continue that success after beating Kentucky. I think this will be a really good game, honestly. I think Auburn's got a little bit of steam rolling after that win against Kentucky. And if they just keep feeding Jarquez the ball, then good things will happen. So,
What does not happen when you run the ball? Don't throw interceptions.
Yeah, that's true. you can maybe fumble, but no, interceptions you cannot do if you run the ball.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I did see the headline last week, or the headline, but the write-up of the game for Auburn, and that Hugh Freeze had just finally looked at his offensive coordinator and says, "We got to start running the ball." Like, hello.
This epiphany.
Yes, like, I'm glad you thought so.
Yeah.
But Jarquez posted like 278 yards just in the last 3 quarters.
That's very impressive. You know, Jarquez is a great running back, one of the best running backs in the SEC. So if you're Auburn, you got to be a run first offense, in my opinion. You know, run on first down, you know, pass on second or third down if you have to, but just keep running the football when you have him in the backfield. Good things will happen. So we'll see if they continue to do that against Vanderbilt or if they try to get cocky and go back to the pass game. We'll have to see.
Well, more than once I've seen Auburn find a player that's a little bit late in the season. Like, for, I think Cam Newton wasn't like the guy until all of a sudden, like 3 or 4 games in, he became the rescue.
Yeah.
And so this is our relief pitcher now. We're going to go ahead and mix our metaphors, but he's our relief pitcher. I'm for it. All right. So you're not predicting, though? You're not predicting Auburn, Vandy?
I'm leaning Vandy right now just because I really like this Vanderbilt team. I don't like them beating my team, but they are hard to beat. Vanderbilt
is hard to beat.
I'm
sitting here wearing my bright orange shirt, and you're going to pick Vandy.
Listen, Auburn will make it a good game, I think, but this Vanderbilt team, they've proven to be really hard to beat. And if Texas struggles against them and Alabama loses against them, I don't know if this Auburn team can beat them.
All right, what's number 3?
Florida, Georgia, a great rivalry game in the SEC this weekend. The largest outdoor cocktail party in the world is the name of this rivalry game, which I guess they're technically not supposed to call it that anymore because apparently they changed the name to tone down the rowdiness around the fans in that game, as if that's going to help. But I'm still going to call it that. Which, by the way, side note, they will be playing this game in Atlanta and in Tampa in 26 and 27. They announced earlier this week because they'll be doing renovations. You know, they've always had it in Jacksonville. That's been the tradition to have it down there, and it's like half Georgia, half Florida. So while there's renovations being made on that stadium, they will be doing it in Atlanta and Tampa in 26 and 27. But Georgia riding high like they have been all year, besides the Alabama game, where they almost came back and won. But beating Texas at Austin, ever since that game, they've been playing like one of the best teams in the nation, and they seem like the Georgia of old right now, of old being the last couple of seasons. But yeah, they're riding high. Florida, though, is putting together some good games and some solid wins. You know, they almost beat Tennessee in Knoxville, and then they dog stopped Kentucky in the Swamp. So Florida is coming off of some momentum, but just looking on paper, Georgia seems to be very much the better team.
Did you say dog stomped?
That's funny you mentioned that. Florida dog stomped. Yeah. Florida gator stomped. Kentucky team. But I'll be interested to see if Georgia can keep it going in this rivalry game, which I think they will. You know, they, after the Alabama game, like I said, they appear to be on a roll. And in my opinion, they're the best team in the country right now. I know Oregon's the number one team, but I would put Georgia ahead of them right now. I think they got better athletes. But I don't know. I don't give Florida much of a chance to pull off the upset, but it would be really fun and chaotic if they did.
It would indeed. It would be a hoot. All right. That's basically three and out. Let's go ahead and take a break. We'll come right back, and we do the two-minute warnings. That's where JP has 2 minutes to get as much as he can about a topic out, and we'll see where he goes. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio, JP on sports. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, it's 4:20 on a Friday afternoon. That means we're going into round two of JP on Sports. He is the host, by the way, of his own show on Saturday mornings. You can catch him on The up in Huntsville from 9 to 11 on Saturday mornings, co-hosting Off the Bench with his bud Kelsey. And so we do this little thing on Friday, though. I take advantage of the fact that I got a guy in the studio who knows smart stuff about sports. Now we do a part called the two-minute warning. All right, JP, you know the deal, man. I start the timer. You got 2 minutes per topic. We got to hit a buzzer when you get to the end, all right?
All right.
Go.
Well, the Dodgers won the World Series, to my dismay. And Freddie Freeman, my childhood Braves hero, was the World Series MVP for the Dodgers of all teams. So I was not very happy to see that. But, you know, the Yankees, they won game four and cut down to a 3-1 lead. And then in game five, they were up by 5 by the fifth inning, looked like they were going to win this game. And then they had a meltdown of epic proportions.
Epic.
They had 2 errors to load the bases, 2 easy plays that were errors, and then gave up a double that brought in 4 runs, and then the fifth later came in, and the Dodgers ended up winning 7-6 to win the World Series. But, you know, it is good that, you know, the best two teams in baseball were playing in the World Series, even if they were the Dodgers and the Yankees. But it breaks my heart to see Freddie Freeman win a ring with another team. So I wasn't happy to see that. Shohei Ohtani gets his first World Series ring, even though people already call him the greatest baseball player ever. And he his first playoff appearance, he gets a World Series ring. So we'll see if the Dodgers can replicate that next year. They'll be keeping all of their stars, so there's no reason to think that they won't. But the countdown to 2025 baseball starts now, and I'm excited because the Braves stunk last year, and I'm ready to forget about this last year.
So are you of the mind though that the Braves are going to recycle somehow into a
The only reason they had such a bad year is that they had so many injuries. I mean, they had one of the best lineups in baseball, and they all just got hurt. So, you know, bad luck and a cursed season kind of stunk that season up. But I'm excited to see all those guys back and healthy. Ronald Acuna Jr., who after winning the MVP tears his other ACL for the second time. And so hopefully the injury ridden season can be gone and we can have a healthy Braves team this next year. But
2 minutes. All right, 2 minutes. Next topic. Ready? Start the clock. Go.
Well, if you were up in Huntsville, Alabama basketball was just up there playing an exhibition game against Memphis, the Rocket City Classic, where Alabama ended up winning 96-88. LeBaron Phylon was the MVP with 17 points. And this Alabama team, I've talked about them before, preseason number two. A lot of people think they have the best roster in college basketball right now, coming off of their first Final Four appearance in program history, looking to have another great season. And right now, like I said, they're one of the main national champion favorites. But as an Alabama fan, that almost worries me. You know, I don't want to get let down and have such high hopes and people expecting a lot from this Alabama team before the season starts, because that normally tends to not go that way. But nevertheless, Alabama and Auburn, for that matter, are the two top two teams in the SEC right now. Preseason rankings have them as the top two. Auburn was ranked 11th as well. So the state of Alabama looks to have two very good basketball teams this year, the two best in the SEC, like I said. So fun times. You know, football season ends for Alabama and Auburn fans, and normally there would be a drop-off. You know, basketball teams aren't normally that good, but there's no drop-off this year, and there hasn't been lately. The state of Alabama has had two great basketball teams for the last couple of years with Nate Oates and Bruce Pearl in the state. So another great year of Alabama hoops, and one of them being the number two team in the nation. It's, you see a number two next to Alabama, you would think football normally, but it's basketball this year, which is pretty crazy. But the first time that the basketball team, the preseason rankings were higher than the football team since 2007.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah. That when Nick Saban took over. So it's been a while that the basketball, you know, Alabama's been deemed a basketball school, but this year they got a good team. So we'll see if they can live up to the hype.
And Auburn, we're a basketball school now. We're a basketball school.
Yeah. I mean, Auburn, you know, they got a fun little arena that they play in, and it's always a hard place to play. So
2 minutes. All right. Let me clear the clock, reset, ready, go for it.
Well, I noticed John Paul earlier asked about the Boise State team who's playing tonight, but we got to talk about Ashton Ginty, who is the Boise State running back, currently the Heisman, yes, Heisman front runner. So there has not been any player really that realistically has had a shot to catch Barry Sanders' record of 2,628 yards in the season. Ashton Ginty has a serious chance of breaking or at least catching that record. As of right now, he's on pace to just barely be short of it, but with week eight, and if his carries keep up, he has a couple of good games, he's very much in reach to catch that record of 2,628 yards. Also 37 touchdowns. Ashton Ginty right now, he's got 1,376 rushing yards for 18 touchdowns, and we're 8 weeks into the college football season. That is just absurd numbers. Yeah. Like I said, this is really the first time that anybody's really looked up and like, he's got a chance of catching that record. I mean, that Barry Sanders record was deemed, you know, unbreakable. But who would have thought, too, that the Boise State would be the school to have that running back to give him a shot, which, you know, he talked about he was offered millions of dollars in NIL to go to a different school, and talked about how Boise State, the legacy there means more to him than any money, any contract offer. So that's refreshing in the new era of NIL, you know, where guys are changing teams like crazy, that he stayed at Boise State and is having the season he's having right now. But like I said, the Heisman front runner, and potentially to break that quote unbreakable record of Barry Sanders, it's pretty crazy. It's something special. If you watch him play, he's a special running back. So we'll see if he can break it.
Isn't it Boise State that plays on bluegrass?
Yeah, the blue turf.
The blue turf. Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that. Yeah, you know, it was cool. It was cool when I was a kid and I would watch it. But now, you know, as I'm a little bit older, I mean, I'm only 21. I want to act like I'm a grown adult here. But
you're a grown adult. You're adulting now.
Yeah, I don't like watching it. It's more of an eyesore.
All right. We got time. Do we have time for another one? Do we? I think we do.
We got a little bit of time for a short one.
You're going to reset the clock, and you're going to go for it.
Well, I can use this opportunity to give John Paul his predictions like he said. I would pick Boise State in this game to continue their undefeated season tonight. Like I said, when you have Ashton Jeanty, it's kind of hard to mess it up. Like we were talking about, Auburn just needs to run the football. Boise State's got an easy game plan every game. Just hand it off to Ashton Jeanty. But the other game was USF, and I'm trying to look. Oh, it was Florida Atlantic. I got USF in this game, too. I mean, this is a USF team that gave Alabama a run for its money at Bryant-Denny. This is a good USF team. They have a chance to be one of the better group of five teams. Their coach is a Tennessee alumni. He runs a very similar offense that Tennessee runs. So I got USF. I like that USF team. And like I said, with Boise State, just hand it off to Ashton every time.
Every single time.
Nobody can beat it.
And just like that, you were 1 minute in and the music kicked on. All right. JP on sports. Good stuff, brother. You can hear him every Saturday morning, by the way, on his own show, Off the Bench, on the Ump out of Huntsville. Him and Kelsey talking sports for 2 hours from 9 to 11. 9 to 11. All right. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm talking about this one. I do mean it. I'm talking about Alabama, y'all. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. We are in the final half hour here. The go-home time is upon us on a Friday afternoon, but I would be remiss if I did not tell you that there's something big coming next week. Pretty stoked about it. On Tuesday night, you guys, it's election night, and I know that there's going to be any number of, you know, places where you can go and get the results, but those of y'all that are Right Side Ruffians, we hope that you will tune in to our new live stream from our new studio. It's going to be myself, JP, Birdman, and Butters all in the Right Side studio commenting on what we see, checking on the results, and you'll have a couple of hours with us plus some guest callers that night. So, yeah, that's Tuesday night, live online from 7:30 to 9:30. And the best place to find it is go to rightsidemedia.org. That's our website, rightsidemedia.org. Or you can stream us on any number of other platforms like YouTube, Rumble, Twitch, Twitter, all the above. So anyway, 7:30 to 9:30 Tuesday night, live stream, election night results with Right Side Media. Check us out. So I'm in this... I'm going to do this last dipper. I'm going for it. I said that today I decided to stage my dippers all on what I believe are the top three things that people are going to the polls about. The first one was the economy. That dipper was called the economic wrecking ball. That's exactly what the Democrats are. They are an economic wrecking ball. And as a key example, I gave you what they have done to the auto industry. The second dipper I had was the immigration nation and what they have done with the southern border, or not done with the southern border, is criminal, in my opinion. And it caused a massive amount of strain and discord and a sense of fear in some places and a sense of being overwhelmed in other places. And it shouldn't have to be that way. And it's made us an insecure nation where we basically don't seem to have a border. That's immigration nation, my number two dipper. The third dipper, I'm calling it the lying liars. And I think what I see, if you lump some of the other things that people say they care about, it relates to a sense of distrust in our federal government. We are sick to death of being lied to. We are sick to death of watching the Democrats literally say something. We watch them say it. We have the audio and we have the video of them saying it. And they will tell us that was not what was said. And I mean, y'all, at some point, you have to look at it and go, you're a bunch of lying liars, and we're tired of it. And what I think there's a deep sense right now, the momentum that Trump has is in part because his own base is galvanized. That's true. I think there's also, though, this great movement among those who may not have been enamored of Trump or even voting Republican, who are sick of being in a position of not trusting their own government, of feeling like their government does not have their best interests at heart, of feeling like they have a government that won't even admit when it's done something blatantly wrong. I mean, gone are the days when they will take accountability for something they screwed up. You can't even get Kamala to say it on the campaign trail. Is there anything you'd do different? Why, no. I can't think of a thing. I mean, for the love of God, if her mouth is moving, she appears to be lying. Now, there's a couple things that have happened today, and there's one that's happened even in the last couple of days that I got to mention. So the whole garbage thing, right? So Joe Biden comes out and just, you know, throws a grenade in the middle of the Harris-Waltz campaign. Kamala's on the ellipse on the Washington Mall, you know, with the beauty of Washington monuments and the Smithsonian and the Washington, you know, the Capitol building and the White House, all of it all around her, giving a speech to thousands on the Washington Mall, trying to make her closing comments. And somebody let Joe log into Zoom. Holy crap. And Joe gets on Zoom and goes rogue and told the world that he thought that people who believe in, you know, Trump's side, they're all garbage. Well, that's the president of the United States just denigrating well over half of his constituents. It gets worse. Because you can watch the video and see him say it. You can listen to the video and hear him say it. And then you can go to the official transcript, which is required by law to be kept of any and all official meetings, speeches, whatever. The president of the United States is not allowed to speak in an official capacity without it being recorded. They actually have stenographers and transcripts made of everyone. Court reporters are there typing it in. And they change the transcript to make it look like he didn't say that. It's an ethical violation. It is unheard of. This morning, Dana Perino, I was watching, and some of y'all may remember, Dana Perino was the press secretary for George W. Bush. I rarely see her get this animated, but this morning, if you happen to see it, she and Bill Hemmer are on in the mornings on Fox. She got very animated about this, says this does not happen. She talked about there was one time when she asked for a correction because someone had heard her say, there's a lot of juice left in the Oval Office, and they wrote down Jews, as in Jewish. And she called him back and said, that is not what I said. And they went and listened to it and they agreed. And it was a press report, though, that was releasing. And they corrected it. And that's the only time she can ever remember official transcripts, something being recorded. Not in this case. In this case, Karine Jean-Pierre. In this case, they went to the president and talked to him. And the transcript was changed. And by the way, it was changed over the complaints of the stenographer. Ethical violation. And then you got stuff that happened like today. The Washington Post is having a complete meltdown. The Washington Post is in complete meltdown mode right now. I've got a piece here from the Free Beacon. The Free Beacon obtained a copy of a recording that was made of inside of a Washington Post editorial board meeting when the editor was literally telling them, look, if y'all want to quit, you go right ahead. The Washington Post chose not to endorse Kamala Harris. They chose not to endorse anybody. Sometimes not endorsing speaks as loud as endorsing. The Washington Post is known for being an uber-liberal, news rag. And their staff is having a complete come apart. So during the meeting, the Washington Free Beacon got a hold of the actual audio recording of the meeting. And they say, during the meeting, the paper's opinion columnists and editors exhibiting a high level of distress unloaded on the opinion editor, David Shipley, complaining that Jeff Bezos was destroying the paper's reputation. Do they hear themselves? What they just said is, we're desperate to be biased and you won't let us be biased. That's what they're saying. They want to be, quote, an independent journalistic organization. Well, you're not independent and journalistic if you're having a meltdown because you weren't allowed to pick sides. You just literally declared yourself as being a liar. We're an independent journalistic, but we're very leftist. And we love it. And we admit it. And we get mad when we're not allowed to be it. And the editor finally had to tell him, look, quit if you want to. Whatever you decide, I'm good with it. I just want to impart to you that you don't need to get yourself stuck in the middle here. You need to get to work. so bad that they started having editorial staff quitting. Today it got a little deeper for WAPO. WAPO apparently does a like a video podcast live stream, and I think it's called the Washington Post Minute, the WAPO Minute, I believe. And Hugh Hewitt, who's a conservative radio guy, syndicated radio show host, Hugh Hewitt was on. And he was just worn out with them. And the host was being extremely smarmy. I mean, he was kind of like a Don Lemon-style guy, just kind of soft touch and yet smarmy while he's talking. And he smarmed on Hugh Hewitt, who finally said, he told him, well, you're always throwing out hateful rhetoric. And Hugh said, I don't do anything like that. And he said, well, if you don't want to, you know, come back, you don't have to. And he goes, you know what? I won't. And he took his headphone off and just got up and walked off the podcast. And they didn't know what to do. Because I'm telling you, people are fed up. People are fed up with the left being a bunch of lying liars. Okay. How about today? How about today, when you can go and watch Donald Trump talking about Liz Cheney? That would be the Liz Cheney who has lied about Donald Trump for the last 4 years. That would be the Liz Cheney who co-chaired the January 6th Commission and desperately wanted Donald Trump thrown in jail. That would be the Liz Cheney who has endorsed Kamala Harris despite being a longtime Republican, who says anything she wants to about Donald Trump. So Trump got on stage with Tucker Carlson, and he was talking about what he considers Liz Cheney to be a radical war hawk. That's the quote. He calls her a radical war hawk at an event in Arizona. And he said this. He was talking about the wars that she has, you know, pushed for, and that her dad, Dick Cheney, has been a profiteer from Halliburton, making huge money off of war profiteering. And Trump said, let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face, they're all war hawks. They sit in Washington in a nice building and they say, oh, gee, let's send 10,000 troops into the mouth of the enemy. He was talking about how she sends people to war without a single thought about it. And he suggests that maybe she ought to go try it. Okay, the left is now saying that Trump wants to execute Liz Cheney. So much so that Liz is looking all hangdog and upset, and Kamala Harris is now saying that these were disqualifying statements and that Trump should not be allowed to run for president. Stop it. No one believes you. You're just making a mockery of yourself. You are beclowning yourself. But they're lying liars, and people are ready to see it change. How about this? I'm not even sure I understand how this works, and maybe my tech guy over here might help me. But a part of the lying liars piece, Kamala Harris's campaign was recently caught manipulating their social media platforms, revealed that they were using what's known as a Discord server that basically sort of directs hordes of volunteers to use their social media accounts to flood in on something and make it appear to be a popular trending thing on social media when it's really not. Do I have that right?
Yeah, so I guess they're kind of called like Discord mods, and there's some accusations that they're paying people to do this to sort of all go and
manipulate the algorithm
and make it seem, you know, make something trending and give the impression more than anything that all these people are, you know, behind what Kamala is saying. You know, the Democrat Party has a history of paying influencers to do that as well. But yeah, it's sort of like manipulating the algorithm to make it prop themselves up organically.
They're sort of astroturfing their campaign a little bit.
Yeah.
They're making it look as if they got fresh grass when they really don't.
Yeah.
I got a big expose here from the Federalist, and it is something to behold. But right now, the lying liars are just, I mean, between the Kamala Harris campaign, the official stuff happening in the White House where they change transcripts, the left-wing media having complete meltdowns and desperately wanting to be leftist while pretending they're not, and then you got YouTube. Well, pray tell, what did you do, YouTube? Well, YouTube owned by Google, I believe. Am I right in saying that? Joe Rogan did the giant 3-hour podcast with Joe with Donald Trump. And now if you go and search, and I know you did this yesterday sitting in the studio, if you go to YouTube and search out Joe Rogan Trump, you don't find it. You can't find it. So Joe Rogan had to go and take the entire thing and upload it to Twitter, X, so that people could see it. It's just unbelievable. Hey, listen, we're out of time. I got to go to a break. I see somebody's on the phone, so we'll come back from this break and we'll take a call. And wow, I mean, lying liars. Here we go. Election day is coming. Can't get here fast enough. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades in here. Real quick, the grades are in from John from Huntsville. He says John Wall and Phil both get an A double plus for their equally fantastic performances. However, today's winner is obviously JP with an A triple plus, even though he did mention Nick Saban, but I'll let it slide just this once, he says. And so congratulations on your victory. You'll probably be seeing the text from me around 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Look forward to it. I only mentioned Nick Saban once in passing.
But you did sit there wearing an Alabama shirt. Yeah, so what do we say? All right, let me go see what Kareem's got. Kareem's on the line, wants to talk about Liz Cheney. So, Kareem, do you really believe the things that they are saying that he said about Liz Cheney?
No, you know what? I don't, Phil. And at this point, I really don't even care. I mean, nothing that he says, you already know I'm not going to vote for this man.
I do.
But my thing is, you got to really stop telling people that the momentum is in his side and all of that, and he's going to eke it out and he's going to win. Because when it don't happen, they're going to be very, very disappointed. Then they're going to start screaming, oh, it's been stolen and the Dems did it again and all of that. All you got to do is watch the things around you. See, in Alabama, it's like you're in the bubble. So you're only going to believe what you see right there in front of you. But when you get out, you go places, like just came back from New York, and we stopped through North Carolina and stuff like that. This is Harry. I'm telling you, she's going to really beat this man badly.
Let me jump in real quick because we only got like about a minute and a half left before we get to go. But no, I don't believe that though. I really do believe that the momentum, the polls say it. The sense of momentum is there. I think the Harris campaign is stumbling. I'm not saying it's not going to be a close race, but I'm not saying that
he's a drag on the ticket. No matter what he does, he's a drag on everybody's ticket. He's been that way since 2020.
He's a drag on his own ticket.
When that red wave don't happen. You know, just don't say it was stolen. Just let the man go away. I don't want him to go to jail. I want him to go to Mar-a-Lago and watch television. You know, give him some books. Let him play president.
All right. Well, listen, whatever. But the bottom line is, I guess we'll see come up. In fact, you might want to even call in on our live feed on Tuesday night on Right Side Media. But I really do believe, I'm pretty comfortable that the momentum right now is on the Republican side. And by the way, if you would, please go tell Stacey Abrams to quit talking about how she lost that election. Got to go, man. Have a great weekend, brother. We'll see.
Okay. You too. Have a great weekend,
brother. See you, buddy. I God love him. I mean, he's sticking with his side. You know what? I don't blame him. I don't fault a guy for having his side. But the reality is, everything. And by the way, you can tell by the desperation in the rhetoric from the left right now. You can tell by the way they're melting down. You can tell by the way they're having to crawfish on statements. You can tell by the way they're having to make things up that aren't there. You can tell by the way they're changing transcripts at the White House. You can tell by the way the polls are moving. But I will agree with Kareem on this. It's not over, all right? It's just not. And so if you've got a friend that hasn't voted yet, if you in an early voting state, if you've got a friend that's not sure how they're going to vote, if you've got a friend that needs a ride to the polls, you just listen. Be there for them. Take care of it. Because, y'all, I'm telling you, I don't think there's been an election in my lifetime, I really don't, that has had as much riding on it. We have got to correct the trajectory that we're on right now. We have got to get this fixed. And I said earlier, and I'm going to go ahead and risk points on Monday's show by saying Bear Bryant's name, but I said in my monologue earlier that Coach Bryant used to say that in every game there is one play that swings the momentum if you can grab hold of it. If you can grab hold of that one momentum swing and play and capitalize on it, you can change the whole game. Tuesday is the swing play. Tuesday is the day when you have to do your part and you have to call your friends, your relatives, your neighbors, your coworkers, your Facebook friends, all of them, and tell them, go to the polls, I don't care where you live, and vote. Exercise that constitutional right that people have died for. That's what we got to do. That's what we got to do. In the meantime, I will tell you this, and I mean it with all sincerity. There are more of us than there are them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you Monday.